Well, I think the key to understanding Jefferson's partisanship with the use of patronage is his ability to demonize his opponents, to conceive of them as, in fact, a disloyal opposition that opposes the goals of the people. To Joseph Priestley, he describes the Federalists as enemies of science and progress. All advances in science were proscribed as innovation. They pretended to praise and encourage education, but it was to be the education of our ancestors. We were to look backwards, not forwards, for improvement. To Governor John Langdon in 1810, he recalls that the Federalists were, in fact, the same old foe that the revolutionaries had fought, the Tories. The Toryism with which we struggled in 77 differed but in name from the Federalism of 99 with which we struggled also. Now I want to turn to the Louisiana Purchase, which is in some way Jefferson's most impressive achievement, but it's also in some ways his most constitutionally suspect. Now, the background to the purchase is pretty straightforward. In May 1801, Jefferson learned that the Spanish had ceded control of Louisiana to France. Now, this was important to the United States because Spain was a fairly weak country, and as long as they controlled New Orleans, we could insist on the right of deposit and navigation through New Orleans, because if we didn't get it, we could always seize it by force. But France was powerful, and this had the prospect of losing New Orleans. And since all trade had to follow the river passages down the Mississippi from the west, whoever controlled New Orleans controlled the interior of the United States. And indeed, he was not wrong to fear French design. Napoleon had, in fact, a western design, a goal to reconquer San Domingo, put down the slave insurrection there, recreate his powerful and extremely profitable sugar plantations, and then conquer and fortify Louisiana. And briefly, navigation is closed in the Mississippi, officially, though in fact much trade still gets through. So Jefferson comes up with a plan. He offers the French $10 million for New Orleans, the city, and for the Floridas. The Floridas at the time include what is currently Florida and the southern parts of Alabama and Mississippi. Well, in fact, the active agent in the Louisiana Purchase is not really Jefferson so much as Napoleon. By early 1803, disease and military defeat had made clear to Napoleon that he was not able to reconquer Haiti, and that his Western plans for a Western empire would have to be shelved. He realizes that war is in the offing again in Europe, and as he prepares for war, he realizes he needs cash. So he turns to the Americans and offers all of Louisiana for a mere $15 million. But the terms of the arrangement are that that has to be delivered immediately or as soon as possible. And this was an incredible deal for Jefferson. I mean, we're buying land at 13.5 cents per acre. This is one of the greatest land transactions probably in the history of the world. And when the treaty arrives on July 4th, which is the exact same day, interestingly, that Meriwether Lewis sets out to map that area, it's ratified in fairly short order. And while most Americans today think of the purchase as a brilliant acquisition, at the time it was actually quite controversial. It was opposed in particular by Easterners, who feared a shift in the sectional balance of power. As we've mentioned, trade from the interior of the United States would always go down the Mississippi, at least until those ingenious Yankees would start building railroads. Therefore, since ideas follow trade, whoever controlled, if the trade was to go through a southern city in New Orleans, the notion is that the West will therefore ally itself with the Republican South. As Uriah Tracy wrote, "I am convinced that the accession of Louisiana will accelerate a division of these states." And in his typical Yankee twang, "whose whenabouts is uncertain, but some when is inevitable." And Jefferson acknowledged this problem in his second inaugural address. "I know that the acquisition of Louisiana has been disapproved by some, from a candid apprehension that the enlargement of our territory would endanger its union." But again, he responds with his ebullient optimism. "But who can limit the extent to which the federative principle may operate effectively?" Well, the problem for Jefferson is that his own theory of strict construction denied him the power to make such a deal. There is no constitutional provision for the acquisition of territory, much less purchase of it. As he writes to Senator John Breckinridge, one of the leaders of his party in the Senate, I presume the Congress will see their duty to their country in ratifying and paying for it, so as to secure a good which would otherwise probably be never again in their power. But I suppose they must then appeal to the nation for an additional article to the Constitution, approving and confirming an act which the nation had not previously authorized.